So we're gonna try to move a little bit of ground, cover a little bit of ground. Sometimes we do two prokim when they're like connected. Here I think we're gonna work on prokim 5 and 6, Hay and Vav. Most of Perek Hay is not connected, but the end of Perek Hay maybe. We'll just get a general overview. There are, and if you take a look right now, prokim Hay and Vav. Read it, skim it to yourself. There are how many topics in here? 4, 5, 6. Take a look at the prokim. Take a minute or two. I don't want to get a large, you know, don't worry about a detailed thing, but a general overview. How many topics are discussed? How many stories are there? How many incidents are there? Take a look. Yeah, 2 or 3 minutes, read through the prokim. Break it up to either 4 or 5, whatever you think is 6. Yeah, prokim, again, I don't know if you have to read every prokim, but kind of summarize. What's going on in these psukim over here? You don't have to get every detail, but you have a general idea of what's going on in Pasukah, what's going on in Beis or whatever, Gimel or whatever, Dal or whatever. We'll take 2 minutes. Read it for Harusa, read it by yourself, whatever you prefer. Let's break up the parak. Again, the reason why we do this is because this way we have a handle on the material. If you just start going, you don't know what's coming up, you get a feel for, okay, first is the story by X, and then by Y, then Z, or Z, depending on what country you come from. Good, 2 minutes, go. All right, let's reconvene. What do you guys think? Perek Hay starts up with Pasuk Aleph. What's the theme of Pasuk Aleph? Yeah, the what? Brit Milah, Pasuk Beis. Hold on. First Pasuk Aleph. What's Pasuk Aleph about? The nation being afraid. And it's actually, we'll talk about this more in depth. Nations. All the other nations of the land of Canaan. By Hikishmo, Kol Malchai Hamori. Asher be'er yarden yama b'chol malchei ha'kanani asher al yamsu asher al yam. They heard about that asher et asher huvish Hashem et be'er yarden et did Israel out of Avram. By yimas levavam, they were afraid in their heart. Lo hayavam od ruach of b'nei Israel. They had no longer any wind or any excitement because of b'nei Israel. They were like petrified. And you'll notice this by yishma the people yishmawa kol malchei. The word shama by yishma yishmawa comes up actually 5 times in this next section. We spoke about last week, if I'm not mistaken, that the first 4 prokim was section 1 of the book, the first major part of Sefer Yoshua. Knisah to Eretz Yisrael. The next section is going to be Hay until Yudbet, which is the Melchamos, the wars. And in this section, 5 times, you hear all the nations being afraid of Klal Yisrael, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that Chumash had predicted when the Jews go to Israel, what's going to happen? And if you'll be afraid of it, you'll be successful. If you're interested, it comes up in Perek Hay, Pasuk Aleph, comes up above, Chav Zayin, Tes, Aleph, Yud, Aleph, Yud, Aleph, Aleph. Every one of those 5 times, by Hi, Kishmoa, this one, 5 times it comes up. There really is, and nobody's trying to drive home the message that there's a real sense of the whole world, or all of Israel, the nation of Canaan, we're all afraid. Now, by the way, why were they afraid? Partially, this story, this little one pasuk, serves as a connection to the previous part, which is, we just passed through Yamsuf, and it was miraculous and unbelievable. And on the other hand, it's a setup for the future. Why is it important that they're afraid? Because we're about to go to war with them. And therefore, this pasuk, I think, by the way, serves as the transition from the first section of the Sefer, which is Knisat L'Eretz Yisrael, to the next section, which is the wars of Kibush, conquering the land, the Melchamah element. In any event, and it's an isolated pasuk. I think the reason why it's isolated is because it stands on its own, and as well as it separates the two parts, as well as connects them together. It separates the previous part of the Sefer from the upcoming part of the Sefer, as well as it's linked to both in the sense that it does say why they're afraid, Asher Hovish Hashem Esmei HaYardein, as well as Vayimas L'Vavam V'lo HaYavam Od Ruach B'nei Yisrael. They're afraid of B'nei Yisrael on a military way. And therefore, this pasuk is a brilliant pasuk. It serves to separate the two sections of the Sefer, as well as show the progression and transition from one to the next. In any event, it's an isolated pasuk, and it's a theme in and of itself. You'll tell.
I once heard something that,
slow down.
One thing that
the reason
that was so terrible about how they attacked was
like
the fact that they attacked means
the less afraid of the nation. Yeah, Rashi has a mashal. They cooled off the bathtub with that boiling hot water, they knew they'd get burned. And again, I think a lot of what we did was created new fear in the times of Yeshua. How did we do so? crossing through the Yarden. And I think that was one of the major goals, is to reignite that fire that made all the other nations afraid. Then afterwards, from Pasuk Beis, we have the story of the Bris Mila. Where does that go until? Beis until where? Ches, yeah. The next six pasuk can talk about Bris Mila, and we'll go back and discuss them properly momentarily. The third section talks about what? The Karban Pesach, and that starts with Pasuk Tes and goes until where? Yud. That, correct. Three pasuk about the Karban Pesach. And we'll have to figure out what the significance of the Bris Mila story, what's the significance of the Karban Pesach story? Why is it mentioned here? Why is it mentioned now? Well, that's a potential answer, and we'll get back to it. Why is it recorded? Are there any other mitzvahs that are, you know, so important or mentioned here or whatever else? Okay. Then, with the third little section of our two prakim over here, it starts with Pasuk Yud-Gimel. What's that? Yeah, the Malach that Yoshua bumped into, the Sar Tzva Hashem. The Mun, you're right, the Mun actually is kind of connected. Where does it come up? It comes at the end of the Karban Pesach story. We'll have to figure out, is that connected or disconnected? On one hand, it seems like a different topic, but on the other hand, there's no stuma or parsha separating. You see the paragraphs in the Tanakh. There's no paragraph included in the last paragraph. So that may have some type of ramification, may have some type of important meaning. But you're right that they stop having mud to figure out what the significance of that is. Then you have the story of Yehoshua meeting the Sar Tzva Hashem. Pesukim Yud Gimel starts the story of Sar Tzva Hashem. And where does it end, by the way? It's a little bit tricky. It's a machlokis, the Jews and the Christians. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
According to the Christians, where does it end? Pasuk Tezvav. Because who broke up the Prakim? King James. In the 1600s? In other words, the Perek division was not Jewish. It's totally Christian. We use it because it's convenient. It is very convenient. But the breakup of the Prakim is totally Christian, has no Hashkafic message at all. The Jews follow the Parshas and Stumas, and therefore you get the impression that what? Where does our conclusion of this section exactly? Vav includes Vav Aleph. And we'll talk about what's behind that machlokes, the Christians and the Jews. By the way, at first glance, who seems to be right, the Christians or the Jews? The Christians. Why? Because at the end of Pasuk Tes Vav is the end of the story of the Tzar Tzva Hashem. What is Pasuk Vav, Parak Vav, Pasuk Aleph all about? Yericho. Now, what is all of Parak Bet, Parak Vav, Pasuk Bet and On all about? The entrance into Yericho as well. The war with Yericho, the preparation and war with Yericho. Parak Vav is all about Yericho. We'll break that up in smaller sections in a minute. But with the exception of, you get the impression, all of Parak Vav is about Yericho. Pasuk Aleph says, by Yericho so garrison, Mr. Gerber Israel, Ein Yoteva, Ein Ba. Isn't that also about Yericho? Isn't the Christian tradition, right? We'll have to figure out what the theory is for the Jewish tradition. But the Jewish tradition starts off with the Yericho story in Parak Vav, Pasuk Beis, and that's the military plan to attack Yericho, and that really goes until, let's say, the end of Yud Aleph, and then Yud Beis until the end of the Perek is essentially the war with Yericho. And again, surprisingly enough, and that takes place for the most of the end of the Perek, until really the end of Chatei, the war. And how we beat Yericho, the chauffeurs, the blowing of the walls, and still walking around 7 times, the wall falling down. We'll discuss that when we get there. And what's Pasuk Chavav and Chavzayin about, by the way? Chavav is what? What? Exactly. It's a curse placed upon anyone who rebuilds Yericho. And Pasuk Chav Zayin, again, is a split between the Jews and the Christians. What do the Jews do? We think it's already connected to the next section, And the Christians think it's about, connected to, this section. And Mirza Shem, that we'll probably discuss next week. How would you analyze this, the last pasuk, Vav Chav Zayin, what's behind that machlokes of Jews and the Christians. Let's just go back, and now that we have a general view of what we're looking at, what we plan on doing tonight is, essentially, the Bris Milah story, the Karban Pesach story, the Sar Tzva Hashem story, the plan for the Yericho story, and the actual Yericho war itself. So those, I guess, five or six parts, whatever they worked out to be, those are the sections we're going to deal with tonight. Again, even if you don't know every single detail, every single passage, just having a general map, looking at the forest, even if you don't know, can't identify the trees, looking at the forest is very helpful. Let's talk about Bris Milah, Karban Pesach, story? The Yericho story, the Tzarek of Hashem, Yericho story, etc., etc. Okay, let's start with the Bris Milah story. If you take a look at Pasuk Beis, it starts off with Ba'es Ha'i, which sounds like a little bit of a funny phrase. What's Ba'es Ha'i? What? At that time, what time are we talking about? What? Eric, the Hay. We're looking something more carefully. We're going to go through each section. We broke up the different sections. Now we're going to try our best to look at the sections and independently try to analyze them. So starting with Ba'es Ha'i. Is that a standard way of beginning a section? It's not so standard. It's a little bit funny. It's specifically at that time. What time are we referring to? What's the Ace? I mean, what's that talking about? Yeah, correct. You get the impression, what are we about to do now? I'm sorry? Before we conquer the land, that's going to come up already in the Parak above. What are we doing in this section? Sukkim Beis through Ches, like we pointed out. Bris Milah. Why is it important that it's Ba'es Ha'i? That it's, you pointed out correctly, so it's at the time where Rachel pointed out correctly, it's at the time where all the nations are afraid. Why is that an important time to do Bris Milah? Because if you do Bris Milah, what's the big fear? If anyone attacks you, and the whole nation just had a Bris Milah, it's very scary. So it could be Ba'es Ha'i is specifically designed to link up to the previous point, which is the whole nation, all the nations were afraid of Klal Yisrael at the time, and therefore it was a safe time to do it for Ba'es Ha'i.
Not even
I think the Navi is hinting at Ba'es Ha'i is an important time because it's specific this time when everyone else is. What? Yeah, the Arma Farshim point that out. They point out a little bit later on, but the Arma Farshim would say, basically, he means now that we've crossed through and we're in a safe area, it's this time as well. Okay, let's continue along. Amar Hashem Yeshua, Asei Lecha Charvos Turim V'Shuv Mol Es Bnei Yisrael Sheinis. Shuv means return, and mol them a second time. And the question one may ask is what?
Why?
Yeah, why though? True. I guess why not? But what's this second time here? What are we referring to? Was there a first time? When was the first time that we're going to do it a second time? If anyone has a question with Rashi, Rashi is the first one to deal with this question. What did he say? It's two pshat in Rashi. Anyone want to read the Rashi? Yeah, not everyone at once.
What
Pasuk Beis. All right, I'll read it. Take a look inside. Shemalu Kfar V'Leil Yitziyasa Mimitzrayim Kahal Gadol Yachad. When was the first Milah? When they left Egypt. V'zu Pam Sheinis Shekol Ha'arvayim Shana Shayu V'midbar Lo Nishba Lehem Ruach Tzi Ponis V'lo Hayo Lehem Yom Lenuach Lamo. They were busy, there was a difficult Ruach that was there, and they couldn't do Milah. That's one pshat, and therefore, this is the second time. When was the first time? Yeah, what's the point of linking, what's the point of saying Shane is, by the way? We're linking it back to, yeah, what's the significance of that? Why is it so important to link it back to the time, what? Yeah, exactly, but you've been mentioning all throughout the entire year, the goal is to almost ignore the last 40 years in which we were exiled, or not exiled, but you know, put into the midbar, stranded, not stranded in the midbar, not allowed to enter. It's almost like we're going to go back and rewrite history exactly from the Bris Milah that took place earlier on. That's why it said Sheinitz. There is a second shot that Rashi does as well. It's worth about to know Rashi's general style of learning. Bravo Seinu Amu Sheinitz, Zu Priyas Milah Shalom Nisnalav Mavinu. Halachically, there's two parts of the Bris Milah. One is the actual Milah, one is the Priyas, means ripping off the foreskin. Maybe that's a classroom of girls, we'll leave the details out for the meantime. But essentially, it's a different halachic element. And that's, by the way, this is a classic Rashi. The first shot Rashi gives is much more shot-oriented. Rashi often, though, likes to quote all sorts of gemaras and learn out halachas from the psukim, and that's an example of something Rashi does here as well. So that's the second possible shot. So again, we have two pshat, and the first is what Rashi suggests in the Ralbag. I'll mention it as well, we're not going to look at the site. But the Ralbag and Rashi's first mahalak are, it's the second time, well, was the first time the Yetzias Mitzrayim. Alternatively, one could say Sheinis, because there are actually two parts to the Bris Milah. One part is the Milah, one part is the Kriya, which is not just the cutting, but the removing, the pulling back of the foreskin. And that could be potentially what is going on with the word Sheinis as well. There is another little pshat that is suggested by the Radak. If you look at the Radak inside, he says as follows, if not, look inside, I'll read it. Chazar pa'am achar pa'am b'machaneh lamul u'vatzavotam lamul u'va'amru v'shuv mol enu omer pa'am v'shtiyah levad. Ela kama pa'am v'shtiyah levad. It doesn't mean once and a second time. Ela kama pa'amim ad shiig miru ha'davar. Now, what does the mouth, what does the Radak say it means? He did a thorough job. They got everyone in. Pa'am achar pa'am, person after person, every single person was done. Okay, so the three pshat that we mentioned over here, the one I like the best, to be honest with you, is Rashi Ralbag, because it goes along with the entire theory we've been developing in the paper so far, which is, let's go back to Bamidbar where things went wrong, and let's rewrite history and take the proper course. The truth is, there's a lot more going on over here. We'll read a little more. Pasuk Gimel. Vayaslo Yoshua, oh, we read that right. Talking about Vezedav Asher Mol Yoshua Kol Am Yitzinu Mitzrayim Hazacharim Kol Anshei Milchama Meisu Bamidbar Bederach Betesim Mitzrayim. What word comes up twice in this pasuk? Mitzrayim. And what may be the significance of that? Again, linking it right back. Imulim Hayu Kol Am Yotzim Kol Am Hayiladim Bamidbar Bederach Betesam Mitzrayim Lo Mol. Again, then they didn't do Mila. Now we are. Why? Ki Arvam Shana Halchu B'nei Yisrael Bamidbar. They were in the Midbar 40 years. Atom Kol Goy Anshei Melchama Yotzim Mitzrayim. Again, until they all died from Mitzrayim. Again, the Navi seems to be saying, we had to let all the Jews who were Yotzim Mitzrayim die, and now we are going back and taking, you know, picking up from where we had left off. Hashem Lo Shem V'Kol Hashem, Hashem Nishba Hashem Lahem L'Kofi Yahu Hashem Hatzarek, Hashem Nishba Hashem Lahem, Hashem Nishba Hashem Lahem, and again, the word that comes up a lot is Mitzrayim. There's one more word that comes up a lot of times, which is the word Mila, Mol, Mule, Mol. It comes up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times in this about 6 psukim. And again, the theme is that here's the chance to do Mila. There's a real emphasis and focus on Mila. Let's get the Pasuk test and talk about the carbon pesach. We're going to spend more time about the Yericho story, which I'm going to put you to get to. Vayom Hashem al Yoshua, Hayom galos yet cherpas Mitzrayim aleichem. Today I am the megala, rolling away the cherpas, the embarrassment of Mitzrayim aleichem. Funny introduction. Vayikrashem akum ahu Gilgal, Aniyom etzeh. We're calling it Gilgal. Why? Because this is the place where Hashem did what? It was megala cherpas Mitzrayim aleichem. Gilgal will be our headquarters for a long time, we'll see. But I guess the significance is we're going to Gilgal, because that's the initial place to move in right after. Okay. And what do we do here? Vayachinu b'nei Yisrael about Gilgal. But and it's important to say that we are camping in Gilgal. Vayachinu b'nei Yisrael about 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 Gilgal. What do we do? The Karm Pesach. And after immediately Vayishbos Hamami Maharas Bachwan Bahura Arts Allah Yaot in Israel, but Israel, Bayaflum was Arat Kinan Peshanahi. No longer at once the Karm Pesach is done, The Navi mentions, it doesn't just mention it, but puts it in the exact same parsha, there's no stuma breaking it up, that we stop getting the money. Now, I guess the major question to ask is, why specifically mention these two mitzvahs? Why specifically Karban Pesach and Bris Milah? Is it just that chronologically we did them at this time? And there are those in the parsha who say, yeah, technically there's a halacha that you can't do a Karban Pesach unless you have a Bris Milah. That could be the point. Although one may ask, was it necessary for us to learn that in Navi? That's a halacha you learn in the Gemara. Although that is one pshat. There is a second theory that seems to link up Karban Pesach to Bris Milah in a different way. Can anyone think of any other distinguishing qualities about these two mitzvahs? Yeah, that's the theory. We'll get there. There are only two mitzvahs in the world, positive mitzvahs, that the absence of them, not doing them, has a punishment of kares. Usually you get kares for doing a low tasa, you eat chametz, that's a violation. Don't eat chametz and you do eat chametz. Don't eat on Yom Kippur and you do. Don't sleep with all sorts of close relationships and you do. If you violate one of those yisurim, you get kares. There are only two positive mitzvah sasays in the world that have kares to them. Anyone can guess who they are? Bris Milah and Karban Pesach. And the suggestion that many have that Rachel was alluding to is these are the two mitzvahs of zehut, of identity. And if you don't do them, you know what you get? Kares. You no longer identify. You're no longer part of Klal Yisrael. These are the two mitzvahs that identify us as being Jews, that publicly declare we are Jews, the Karban Pesach and the Bris Milah. And that's why without them you get kares. If you don't identify with us, you get cut off. It could be what may be the specific point over here. Why are they mentioned over here? Exactly. We're walking in and we're making our presence. And that's exactly the point. We go to this place called Gilgal, a brand new place. We sit down and we establish ourselves. We are Klal Yisrael. We have this certain identity. This is who we are. Let's publicize, let's broadcast that we're here and we're here to do our business. One last point in terms of the ending of the month, Hashem stopping to feed us from the sky. So some of Farshim write, Rashi, for example, as well as others, write that essentially the month stopped falling really earlier on. No, it's really that Mizayim Ba'adr Shemes Moshe Shepasa Kaman. The month stopped falling when Moshe died. It was directly related to him. Why then does it mention it here? Rashi says, Hayu Mistapkin Arachshav Miman Shebeklayim Shalokti B'Sheva Ba'adr. When they collected a lot, there was a lot of man on the 7th of Adar when Moshe died, and the Jews collected and saved it from Adar until the 14th of Pesach. For 5 weeks, they saved all the man, and they've been eating it until now. And either that's why it mentions it now, whatever reason why, whether they actually stop now or stop with Moshe Rabbeinu, which is being emphasized now, it's worthwhile to note that it is being emphasized now, and the question becomes why. And there are two answers in the parsha given. One is a very technical and halachic answer that Radak mentions this, maybe others as well, which is that come along with the Karban Pesach, there's halacha about chadash, there's new grain that you're allowed to eat, and once you're allowed to eat the grain, we no longer need the month. There's a great textual support in Pasuk Yud-Beis for this theory. What might that be? Take a look at Pasuk Yud-Beis. How does one see that the halacha of eating the grain is linked to the Karban Pesach? I think the Radak makes that point about the chadash. The Radak makes the point and says that once we now have Chadash, which is mutter, we no longer need the man. What great support would you find in Pasuk Yud-Beis about that? Yeah, look at the Pasuk. It's pretty straightforward, yeah? What? Vayachlu mitzuat eretz Kanaan bashana ahi. Why does the Pasuk tell me that they ate from the grain that year? It could be because, until now, it was us because of Chadash, this halacha, that you're not allowed to have new grain. Here, all of a sudden, it's mutter to eat the Chadash, it's mutter to eat the grain. And therefore, potentially, that's the connection. And that's what the Radak writes. It's a very technical, halachic one. There is a second theory, which maybe one could think of, which, what would that be? Why else is it so significant that we're stopping to eat the mun? What is that reflective of? You ever heard of it?
Aren't the people getting into doing it yourself, working the land?
Correct. It could be we're building towards a transition. or we're transitioning from the old miraculous supernatural eating man from the sky nation who left Egypt into a nation that has to stand up on their own two feet. And it could be the Jews thought that the Bris Milah and the Karban Pesach were not just two random mitzvahs, but mitzvahs that mean, you know, we're identifying as, I guess, Jewish people, but a mundane type of Jewish people. All throughout the Midbar, they didn't do this. Here we're kind of settling down, and along with the settling down is settling down in a mundane, natural, normative, physical and you know, non-metaphysical, you know, mundane, non-natural, natural, non-miraculous lifestyle. And it could be that maybe why it's connected. It could be it's connected because of the halacha, like the Radak pointed out, or it could be like Racheli wanted to suggest, that the Mayachlum Yitzvos Eretz Kanan B'Shanah Ahi means, in this year, the first year they got into Eretz Yisrael, they already started living a more mundane, a more physical, a less miraculous lifestyle. It could be that's the point. Let's take a few questions, then we'll move into the story with the Sar Tavashem. Yom Tov.
How do they
have the
name
on the Shem, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
They
didn't fight any battles. They just kind of crossed over the Yarden and moved into a place called Gilgal, which I assume is geographically right at the beginning of Eretz Yisrael. If I just make a quick map on the board here, I kind of get a, you know, feel. It could have been drawn to snap a lap. But I'm not sure if they grew their own stuff or there was already stuff growing here. No, I don't know. But Eretz Yisrael kind of looks like this, right? Something like that. Right? Here would be, let's say, Egypt. Here would be, let's say, the opposite of what we call the Mediterranean Sea. They call that Sinai. Where the Jews come from? Where's the Arden River? Here's the big Kinneret, and here would be bigger the Dead Sea. Here's the Arden that connects it, and the Jews kind of cross in this way. And we'll see if anyone knows. Jericho is actually over here with the first battle. I assume Gilgal somewhere over here. And as we go through city by city, we'll look at the map and figure out. This will be one of the cool things of the military / land conquering. We're going to not just look at the map itself, but we're going to try to figure out, well, what was their military strategy? That, I think that'll be kind of cool. And when they divide the land, we get to like the fucking, you know, Tetzav, Tetzayim, we'll have to figure out, well, what land was given everywhere. So I wonder if we can get a general feeling of the map. When we came out of Egypt, we didn't go the quickest way to Israel, right? That's the Tzukim, right? In other words, even though it's the closest way, Kikarovu, we went all the way around the Midbar. Again, not a 40-year trip, but nonetheless, not the quickest way. We went all the way from Israel around this way, and we're going to up past the Dead Sea. And we actually, you know, we spent some time up here. Here would be, let's say, in Hayarden, which is called, these days we call it the Galil. And the 2.5 tribes kind of checked it out here. They liked it a lot. The 2.5 tribes said, we don't want to cross over the Yarden here. We want to spend time over here where the Jews were. We'll see. You know, actually, I said it was like a Galil, it's really the Golan, I apologize. It's really the Golan over here. And just to get a feel for the map of Israel, it's good in general for us to see over here in Harova, and more specifically, because you can't really understand if Yeshua well without a proper map. So what we're doing is we're going in right to the beginning of Gilgal, and I assume, you know, it wasn't easy if we had fences and borders with cameras and, you know, trolling. There are a bunch of tribal nations over here, you know, gathering around. The Jews went into Gilgal, and people started getting afraid because they're into Gilgal. Now, okay, good. Let's take a look at the story of Tzar Tzvah Hashem. Perakei Pasuk Yud Gimel. How much time do we have, by the way? We finished when? We finished at 7? Okay, perfect. Good. Vayhi b'yos Yoshua b'Yericho. By the way, where was Yoshua? Over here? What does the Pasuk say? Where does it say he was? What? He was in Yericho. Now, by the way, do you think he was really in Yericho? Very difficult to say he was really in Yericho because... Yeah, they probably would have killed him. There were walls that were surrounding it. But if you take a look at Rashi, that's exactly what Rashi points out. Mikan Ibura Shal Ir Shahi Min Hayir, Shiev Shalomar Batoch Hayir. Rashi writes that he was in the surrounding. He was in the, what's the word? The suburbs of Yericho. And that's important to recognize that even though he probably wasn't in Yericho, the Navi puts him seemingly in Yericho. We'll have to figure out why that's the case. And then you have these psukim over here. Now, I'm going to ask someone to pay, everyone stay over here, pay attention to Yud Gimel. I'm actually going to skip back and read a different parak, and you'll tell me how similar it is. You'll tell me, you know, where I'm reading from. Yeah. I can shut off the air.
How do I do it? Right.
Okay, everyone keep on looking over here in Perek, exactly where we left off. Again, when we read this story, we'll have to figure out the difference between the Christians and the Jews and the King James, that little story over here. But it's worthwhile to notice that they are in Yericho. Good. Keep your head open. Keep your eyes open to this pasuk over here. Hey, Yud Gimel. I'm going to read back from Bereishis Yud Ches Beis, and just pay attention to the pasuk and come with similar. It's actually from this week's parsha. You'll like it, hopefully. I'm reading from Bereishis. You guys look along in Yoshua Vav Yud Gimel. You ready? Vayisa Einav, Vayar, Vihine Shlosha Anashim, Nitzavim Alav. Anyone say that sounds similar or different? It starts off Vayisa, then it has Einav, then it has Vayar, then it has Vihine. Now, when it came to Avram, the angels visiting Avram, there were three, so it says Shlosha. But here it's only one, and each time it's standing, one is Nitzavim, where's his Omei? Let's figure out what the difference is of that. But you get the impression that what? That this story of Yehoshua meeting the angel is very similar to Abraham meeting the angel. Now, by the way, it's not just similar in the sense that it's the same words and meeting an angel, but what this is, you know, dealing with what? It's right after a Bris Milah event, by the way. After Abraham had the Bris, he meets these angels, he's waiting 3 days, and all of a sudden, right? That's why he's waiting for these three angels. You know, that's why it's, you know, it's the third day. It's Kohem Hashem doesn't make anyone come to the post-Bris Milah. And essentially, it's here for Yeshua. It's also a post-Bris Milah event as well. Both times the word, the Navi, as well as the Chumash, uses the word Vayishtachu, indicating that what? There's a bowing going on. And again, one may think that there's a strong parallel over here. More than that, Yud Chet Bet, it's Mamash, it's our Parsha. More than that, if you remember, we had even pointed out that this is a very similar story. What are these angels coming to tell Abraham? Stone's about to be destroyed. And we pointed out that there was a very strong parallel between the Stone and Yericho story as well. It could be one of the ways, again, it's unclear what the purpose of this prophecy is. When we read the story, this Sarts of Hashem, we won't even know what he's coming to do. But if you already recognize these parallels, what might he be coming to do? Almost to tell Yoshua, that what? Yericho is going to be destroyed. Yeah, I think that may be the point. And if you look, you read it at first glance, you don't even know what the point of the story is. Let's continue. V'charbo shlufo biyado. It's interesting to note that the Sar Tzva Hashem has he's equipped. What does he have? A sword in his hand. Vayelech Yeshua Elav, Vayomer Lo, Halanu Ata Im Tzareinu. Are you with us, Aratz? Vayomer Lo, Keni Sar Tzva Hashem, Ata Bati. I came right now. Vayipol Yeshua Al Panav, Yeshua called his Arta. Vayishtachu, just like Avim Vayishtachu. Vayomer Maduni Medaber Al Avdav, speak. And then all of a sudden the Navi quotes, instead of the pasuk about Avram, quotes a different pasuk, which is Vayomer Sar Tzva Hashem El Yeshua Shal Nalecha Mial Raglech Kiya Makom Ata Umeida Lav Kodesh Hu. Vayas Yeshua came. What does that sound like? The famous story of Moshe with the snake. However, it's almost a perfect quote. There's one word that the Yeshua left out, which is it says Amakom Ata Asher Ata Umeida Lav Kodesh Hu. Earlier on it said Admas Kodesh Hu. To figure out what the significance of that might be. And then you have this pasuk, which again is a discussion according to the Jews and the Christians. Is it part of the previous section or something different? According to the Christians, what's the whole point? It's a preparatory stage about how difficult the military battle and plan will be against Yericho. That makes a lot of sense. Again, the question becomes, what about according to us? According to the Jews, what's the significance of this whole section? And why do we believe that the fact that Yericho was so garrisoned with Bnei Yisrael is significant? And I'll answer the entire question in a more important or direct way. If I was writing Sefer Yehoshua, why would I tell the story of the Tzaddik of Hashem? What is the reader supposed to take out of it? What's the purpose of this story? Why does Yehoshua, when he wrote his own Sefer, think this was an important event to include? So, therefore, what? So the truth is there are two theories that I think people suggest. I don't know who suggests them. The second one's my own. The first one is I think I saw on the internet somewhere. I don't remember who I saw it by. The first suggestion is I want you to recognize that we're going into Eretz Yisrael. It's a holy place. And the same way Moshe Rabbeinu took off his feet when he was on Admas Kodesh, this is not Admas Kodesh, technically because God's in the area. This is fundamentally Kodesh because it's Eretz Yisrael. And it's important to realize that Moshe's mission was to take the Jews out of Egypt, and your mission starts the exact same way, but it's to bring them into Eretz Yisrael. Again, it's almost doing what? Rewriting Chumash. Going back to when Moshe Rabbeinu took the Jews out, it was the wrong nation. It was a nation who wasn't prepared, were not ready, they did not have the mindset. They were slave mentality, they were slave driven, they were not ready to go in. Yehoshua, go back and prepare to finish the mission. And the best way to show it's a continuation is what?
To make the parallel
again. But the point is, it's the focus from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. I think that was a great shot. I really think that's a good shot. There is, however, a second suggestion, which I like to throw out, which is along the lines of I've been dealing with the whole time as well, which is, it's true Yehoshua was now seen in the eyes of Bnei Yisrael as a winner, like we pointed out in Parak Daled, Pasuk Yudav. It's true that Yamsef had the Jews look at Yehoshua like a leader. But at the end of the day, Yehoshua had not yet fought in the battle. He had not yet won. The first battle would be very, very significant. And it could be that Hashem is trying to give Yehoshua the confidence it takes to be prepared for this war. For example, A, it's the first real war. B, and Pasuk Yedal, I came now. Why is that important? According to the first chapter, because he just got into Eretz Yisrael. Although really got in a little bit before. Here, I believe maybe the whole purpose of this angel coming is to tell Yehoshua, you will be successful in battle. By the way, you'll be successful just like Moshe was successful. Take off your shoes. Moshe took off his shoes. You'll be more successful in the battle after Israel. And by the way, you know what? What is the only thing we know about the angel? What is he carrying? Karbash Lufabiyado. What do you think that's reflective of? What's his imagery? Why do we have him carrying a sword? The answer is you will win the battle and beat Yericho. And it could be that's exactly the parallel from Avraham Avinu with stone. Just like stone was beaten, so too Yericho will be beaten. And just to take it one step further, this may explain why Pasuk Vav, Parak Vav, Pasuk Aleph is linked. You want to know why? Let's read the Pasuk again. Yericho so garis and misu garis. It's not just closed, but rather why? The next three words of the Pasuk? Mipnei Bnei Yisrael, Ein Yotze Ein Ba. This is not just a pasuk. Vav, Perek Vav, Pasuk Aleph. It's not just a pasuk telling us how Yericho was guarded up, but it was guarded up specifically Mipnei Bnei Yisrael. And the point is, I think, to give Yehoshua the confidence, to remind him of Avram, to remind him of Moshe, to show him an angel holding on a weapon in his hand, which is indicative of the fact that Yehoshua, you will be successful. And by the way, where does the Navi say Yehoshua was standing? Again, back to Pasuk Yud Gimel, the Yericho. Again, I don't think literally he was, as Rashi told us. But I think the point is, Yehoshua's mindset is on Yericho. Yehoshua is dreaming about Yericho. And therefore, this whole story, I believe, is a miraculous way of telling Yehoshua, we will be successful. This is your first battle. Have faith, have confidence. I know it's an overwhelming feeling. I know it's a tremendous task. But don't worry, you'll be successful. I think that's the point of the angel, the Tzaritz of Hashem coming. And by the way, what type of angel is coming? What's the most obvious proof of this theory that it's about giving Yehoshua the faith and the confidence to be successful about, again, well, he's not a regular Malach, he is a Tzaritz of Hashem. Exactly. Exactly. And it could be that's the purpose of this little section. If that's true, I understand the Jewish tradition very well. That Pukkas Vavalik is not just a preparation for the next thing, but rather it's a indicative of not just that will be it's not just that you'll be successful, that Yericho is scared of you and we will be successful. One second. Just to throw out one little parenthetical point. There's an interesting Ralbag. The Ralbag writes over here, I'm not going to read it inside, but the Ralbag writes over here that this whole story with Yehoshua was a dream. Which is probably an important throwback to a major machlokas. The Rambam writes in the Maor Nebuchim, any time any person ever speaks to an angel, it's always a dream. Prophecy, a dream, a vision, it's never real. The Rambam, Maimonides. The Rambam writes, the Ralbag here writes it on Yehoshua, and I think it's probably because the Ralbag, in general, is a Maimonidean thinker, thinks like the Rambam. Specifically here, any time in Chumash you have an angel talking to a man, it's a dream. And that's what the Rambam writes when it comes to the three angels that come to visit Avram. I think it's a dream as well. And when Yaakov fought with the angel, right, the Abba Gishimo, that's a dream as well. And when the angels came to speak to Lot, that's a dream as well. The Ramban disagrees severely. He writes, if that's the case, Lot would have never escaped from stone. Yaakov would have never been limping. Why did the Torah sometimes tell us it's a dream, and then talk about angels, and sometimes it tells angels if it's not a dream, says the Ramban, because sometimes it is a dream and sometimes it's not. That's a major machlokas, the Rambam and Ramban, about angels and whether or not we interact with angels. It's not a critical point for us right now, but the fact that the Ralbag makes it on the spot over here is worthwhile addressing it. And again, whether or not this story took place in a dream or in a literal fashion is really not my business so much. It's that really important hashgafic point about how angels work. But for me, I just want to know, why does the Navi include it here? What's the reader supposed to get out of the sefer? And I think the point is, like we alluded to earlier on, that Yehoshua is going to be successful. But it was interesting. The Rambam and the Maor Nebuchim Perek, Chelik Beis Perek Memdal, you could look it up. The Ramban right on Parsha, in the beginning of Parsha Tveira, Perek Yilchas Pasuk Aleph. If anyone's interested in looking it up, it's a worthwhile machlokas to discuss. Let's take a quick round of questions, then we'll try our best to take a look at Perek Vav, which is the plan for the battle as well as the battle itself. Yeah, Rachel, what's up?
Does Rambam first write whenever
there's a dream,
and
then he says,
the
battle is a dream? The Rambam writes, it's always a dream. The Ramban, no. Said sometimes yes, sometimes no, and these are some of the questions. How did Lot get out of stone? Why was Yaakov limping? Why does the Torah sometimes tell us it's a dream and sometimes not? Ella what, said the Ramban? No, it's only a dream if the Torah tells us it's a dream, and if it's not a dream, the Torah presents it that way. Machlok is Rambam versus Ramban. The Rambam believes it's a dream. The Ramban believes sometimes it's a dream, sometimes not. And the Rambam believes it's always a dream, and the Ralbag here seems to be taking the line of reasoning, the school of thought of the Rambam. Yeah, Rachel, what's that question?
I didn't understand the whole
thing about like the book that we're going to read. That you read, it was Sogeret, in other words, according to the Christians, that's the preparation for the next part of the section, which is without the Yericho. For the Jews, it's critical that the Malach prophecy doesn't end before any allusion to Yericho. Because the whole point is they'll be successful in Yericho. And the Malach basically, in other words, Yericho Sogeret Misugeret, why? And I think the Lashon of Mitnei B'nei Yisrael, that they're very afraid, they're fearful, they're scared of B'nei Yisrael, but it's critical to link the Yericho mention, to mention the Pasuk Aleph, to mention the Yericho thing in the context of the Tzaritz of Hashem, because the point is to have the reader recognize that the whole reason why the Sarat of Hashem is coming is to drive home this message that you'll be successful in the war with Yericho. You follow that? Yeah, who else? Yeah, what's up?
Okay, well, should we
assume... How, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's
up? Should we assume that Yeshua, like, knew about Moshe and that whole, like, now what I'm taking off the shoes, like otherwise...
I assume the answer is probably yes, because he probably learned Chumash, A. And B, irrelevant, the author of Sefer Yehoshua, which coincidentally happens to be Yehoshua, is clearly drawing a parallel for the reader to come across. It's too much of a coincidence. The lack of the word Admas, I think, supports the first theory a little better, not the Eretz Yisrael theory. My theory is the confidence theory, but the truth is they both may be true. They're not contradictory theories, they're just different. Yeah?
And then the second question is, if you go according to the Ramban, that everything was a dream, and like,
but that's
the thing that, like, first of all,
the Aram
and Sarah shared
the
dream, because she also got a
message
when they came.
Maybe, maybe, or maybe
Abel
told Sarah, I don't know, I'm not sure.
And then also, people still, weren't they asking, like, and they said, like, take the people, like, the people they wanted, like, the people
they wanted. Yeah, maybe that was a dream also, maybe. It's unclear exactly how the Rambam would read all these things.
Yeah,
maybe this is my not-so-from side coming out, but the Rambam was proud when he made these points, and he makes his philosophical points. Very often he's less concerned with the text and much more with its philosophical position. And therefore, sometimes the Rambam, if you believe something is true, it's philosophically true, reinterpret the text to make it fit with what is a philosophical truth. Many people do that. You know, everyone thinks you have to reinterpret the text to make it make sense with logic, but the Rambam stands very strong with his philosophical beliefs and therefore interprets a lot of texts based upon the philosophical beliefs. And even if the text would say other things, I'm not sure how convinced the Rambam was. The Rambam, like, people don't talk to my angels. Interpret the text however you want. I don't know what you got to do. But the following is a fact. So you got to reinterpret the text somehow. Yeah?
Compared to
Israel,
you said that Israel was, like, no one
was
going in
there
to leave.
That
it was
going to
be guarded by them. But
I don't think it means the Jews. I think it means no one at all was going in or coming out because they were so scared of the Jews.
Oh, they were scared of it.
I think so. Yeah, that's where it came from. Okay. Now, the next little section we have is, starts with Perek Vav, Pasuk Bey. Vayomer Hashem el Yehoshua re'enes ad b'yadcha es Yericho ve'es malcha gibore chayim. There's a great machlokus, the Radach and the Malbim on this pasuk. I want you guys to take a look. I'm going to give you guys 2 minutes again. Take a look at the Radach and the Malbim, Perek Vav, Pasuk Bey. Tell me what the machlokus is. We'll give you 2 minutes to look at it yourself. Take a look at the machlokas, we'll reconvene. I know I'm usually like, looking to take a look. You have a Radak and Malbim, fantastic. You were supposed to bring one. If you don't have one, feel free to buy one. It's still not too late. If not, at least bring it for the base mattress upstairs. You should have a Mefarshim inside. Okay, now, did anyone figure out what any of the Mefarshim said? What does the Radak say in this process? What's the point? What's the Kiddush on the base? Anyone working through? Yeah, Rachel? Correct. When it says Vayomer Hashem El Yehoshua, what's the Malbim, what's the Radak rather, what's his big Kiddush?
Like the Malbim.
This is a continuation of the previous story. Vayomer Hashem El Yehoshua Al Yidei HaMalach HaNirela Hu Nikra B'Shem Hashem HaShaleach Ota V'Chei Matinu B'Malach Shinira L'Gidon Vayomer Elav Hashem Ki Ayayimah. It's the same story in Gidon later on in Sefer Shoftim. Sometimes if it says Vayom Hashem, it doesn't mean Hashem spoke to him directly, but rather it's through the Malach. If that's the case, according to the Radak, essentially all this preparation for war that takes place in Perek Vav, Pesukim Beis, until I guess Hey, where the end of the prep, the end where the Malach stops speaking to Yeshua, is all part of the previous angel story. And again, I think it supports the previous theory we just suggested, which is why the angel comes to tell Yehoshua two things now. Number one, you'll be successful. Number two, here's how. Here's the strategy. Here's the military game plan. According to the Malbim, if you take a look, Vayomer, it says, V'az Amar Hashem Elav. What's the difference according to the Malbim? No longer is the Radak continuing talking to him, but now it's God himself. I'm not sure what the difference is in terms of the larger picture, but in the smaller picture, the difference is, did the angel just come to give reassurance to Yeshua alone, or did he also come to tell him about how the Jews are going to win? In any event, I thought that was a fascinating machlokes. I'm not sure what's reflective of. Does it tell you the larger story? Yeah, what do you want to suggest? According to the Radak. I guess Hashem, in other words, the Malbim was, according to the Radak, sometimes the Navi does that, it tells you. The Radak, what he says, sometimes the Navi just tells you, B'Shem Hashem. Sometimes the angel rather tells you, B'Shem Hashem. Now, why specifically it says earlier on, Vayomer starts of Hashem al Yoshua, here it says directly Yoshua, why does the Navi present it differently? I'm not sure, maybe it's a different type of message? What do you think? Yeah, again, definitely there's a difference between the first message and the second message. Whether the mouth delivers both, one from himself and one through Hashem, or whether it's Hashem the second one, there is a difference between the two messages. How significant of a difference, according to the Radak, it is much less significant, according to the mouth, and there's a bigger gap between the two versions of message. What do these two opinions reflect about? Meaning, what triggered the Malbim not to like the Radak, and why the Radak, why did he insist it was the angel? I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe the Radak wanted how we're going to win to the fact that we're going to win connected, while according to the Malbim it's less connected, although I'm not sure the significance of that requires a little more thought. I don't know. Let's continue, because I only have a few more minutes left to finish the parak. And again, Hashem says in Pasuk Beis, "Vayomer Hashem Yeshua, Reina Sati Yodchet Zirichah Betz Malkan Gibor Echayo, V'Stavol Semes Ha'ir Kol Anshem Mil Hamil Kamah Hakep Asir Pamachas Kot Esar Sheishis." And then surround the city for 6 days. V'Shiva Konim Yisu Shiva Shofros Hayov Luch Ne'aron V'Yomer Shvitz Sogu As Ha'ir Sheva Pamim V'Akonim Yitzku V'Shofros. Walk around the city every day, one time, 6 days, one time each. And on the seventh day, walk around seven times. Vayhadim shoch b'karen hayovel kishamachem es kol hashoch b'yariu kol ha'am tshuva gedola b'naflu chomos. Chomas, rather, which is singular. I think only one wall fell down. We'll see it later on. Only one wall fell down. Chomas ha'ir tachtel v'alu ha'am ish negdo. And the Jews will walk around seven times, they'll blow the shofar, and one wall will fall down. The reason why one wall is significant, I think it's because, I forgot exactly how, but I think archaeologists were bothered. They found no proof that the walls of Yericho had all fallen down or something like that. So I think the pasuk says Chomas is one wall. Later on, the pasuk Kaf additionally says Bihikishmo Ha'ames Hakol Shof Yeriu Batipol HaChomas Tachteh. I think only one wall fell down, and the reason why it's most significant for us is because Rachav was living in the wall. They came to her house with the red string, and they realized that she was still in there. So in other words, it's pretty clear that what? All the walls didn't fall down. I think only one wall fell down. That's an important point. You know, all the walls fell down. I think only one wall fell down. Rachel remained in the wall. And I guess the point is Hashem wanted to make it miraculous, but not unnecessarily so, only enough that the Jews can go in. I'm going to skip a couple of psukim. At least until then. Anyway, in any event, what we took place until Pasuk Hey was Hashem told Yeshua the plan. Then Pasuk Vav until the end of Parah, until the end of Yeralis, the whole section of Yeshua telling the Jews the plan. Rabbi Yekra Yeshua ben Nun Elikonim Yomar Lehem. Here's what to do. And he tells them what to do, and obviously they do that. Exactly why we're doing this, the Ravad points out that the reason why the Jews blow shofar was in order to give the Jews a sense of tshuva, and shofar is a religiously inspiring instrument. The reason why we walked around seven times was for Yericho. One could have argued it was all for Yericho. Who knows? Why not? But that's the mountain. Rabbah makes a nice little split. Rabbah himself makes a point about the one wall falling down. In any event, so Hashem told the plan to Yeshua. Yeshua told the plan to people and passing the base and put it into action. Vayashkim Yeshua baboker. Again, we pointed out that there's a few times that Vayashkim Yeshua baboker. Not sure why. Here's the second time we get up to Vayisua Konim as Aaron Hashem, and they begin to carry out the plan. They start going around. Pasuk Yizayim Vahaisa Yir Cherem He V'Chol Asher Bo LaHashem Rak Rakav Azor Tia He V'Chol Asher Ita B'Bayis Ki Hitzehich Ba'ata Be'ez HaMalachim Asher Shalachanu. Yeshua tells people, don't take any booty, don't take any spoils, don't take anything from the house. He spells it out more clearly in Pasuk Yitzes. Kill everything, don't leave anyone alive except for Rachav and everyone who's with her, Pasuk Yud Tes is giving down. V'chol katev azav v'chli nechoshet v'barzal kodesh v'lashem otzer Hashem yavav. Don't take what? Anything. Don't take any gold. Don't take any silver. Everything is an otzer to Hashem. It's a treasure for Hashem. Everything is booty. It's spoils that remain behind. Now, one of the reasons why I think it's so important to spell it out in Pasuk Yud Tes, and more so, drive it home in Pasuk Chavdal when they actually do it. I'm gonna be Pasuk Chavdal, but you'll notice the exact parallel. Lashon Va'ir Sarfu Ba'ish, they burnt the city. B'chol Asher Ba, Rak, again, here's the exact quote. Hakasev Ba'hazav V'klei Choshet Ba'barzal Nas Ne'otzai Beis Hashem, they didn't take anything. And the reason why it's so important to note that they didn't take anything is foreshadowing for what? The next parak of Achav, who in fact did. Now the reason why the Navi can say no one took anything is probably because, is it really true? It's not really true. Achav took. What's the point? I assume the Navi tells it, spells it out, and reinforces it, almost quoting it word for word, that they listened to Yoshua, because that's probably the perspective or the mindset they had. How many Jews really took? I think only Achav. And if that's the case, the Navi's telling us the Jews didn't take, because why? In fact, most Jews didn't take, almost everyone didn't take, and they really what? They really saw themselves as if they had listened, and almost to like drive that point home again, the Chumash, the Navi quotes itself, almost parallel, Pasuk Yud Tes to Chavdal, it almost quotes itself parallel, again, reinforcing the point that what? They did not take anything. Again, it's foreshadowing for Achav, who did take, and that which Hashem will discuss next week. There are a couple other important things to remember over here. They saved Rachav, they called Rachav Adona again. The Medrash Gemara says that Yeshua married Rachav over here. She was saved with her family. Again, the parallels to the stone. You know, the two of the Meraglim who were there, they call them Anoshim, they call them Malachim, the same two titles that we use for the people coming to Lot, etc., etc. And just to conclude with one last comment, if you look at Pasuk Chavav, I'm sorry, Chav Zayin, it says, Vayhi Hashem et Yehoshua, Vayhi Kishma b'chol ha'aretz. That Pasuk Chav Zayin, we think is already the beginning of the new section. The Christians think it's part of this section. I'll have to figure out. The Christians think it's a conclusion to, right? Vayhi Hashem et Yehoshua, Vayhi Hashem et Yehoshua, Vayhi Shamo b'chol ha'aretz. Again, the same Shemia that we started Parakei with. There's all of a sudden all the nations here, Kol Haaretz, to here, according to the Christian. This is concluding the story of Yericho. You'll see in a second, or next week rather, it's actually the beginning of Perek Zion. And again, one may ask, according to the Christian, to make a lot of sense. We started by talking about how the nations fear God. There's this miraculous battle with Yehoshua, the story concludes with, and they heard how great the war was. Isn't that a conclusion to the story like the Christians believe? Why does Jewish tradition put this pasuk with the next story? Why is Vav Chav Zayin linked to Perek Zayin? Mitzvah Hashem will discuss that next week. Girls, have a great week.